You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 13 March. We've got U.S. PCE inflation data. This is the Fed's preferred. And then also U.S. GDP data, both this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Skelklo, PSG, Old Oak. Standard Bank results, good-looking results. They're 40% rest of Africa these days. Woolies loses their CEO and oil woes. We're chatting with Senior Director and Researcher at TransUnion Africa. Trends after decade high in new vehicle sales. I think we're at 12-year highs, 13-year highs in vehicle sales. Thoughts from me, will the Iranian war be another taco trade? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, AI is dumping 150-page complaints on finance ombuds desk. What used to take a paragraph or two now comes in book-sized tomes, often with fake legal cases as references. Bloomberg aluminium near 4-year high as war risks means smelter closures. Morning markets, we've got the US red overnight, S&P down 1.5%, NASDAQ off 1.7%. The East is mixed. Sydney's up almost 0.5%, Tokyo down 1.2%, Hong Kong down 0.5%, and then Tencent up just over 1%. Commodities also mixed. Gold futures down 5,114. Brent is green, but 50 cents, $192 a barrel. Platinum is 2,140, and the other green is palladium, 1,657. The rand is 16.79, Bitcoin 71,000, and top 40 opening call, a green open, not a lot, 215 points or 0.2%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Skelklo, PSG Old Oak. Skelk, always appreciate the early morning. The Standard Bank results, the last of the big four to report, although Capitec probably wants to put their hand up, but they're on a slightly different cadence. A lot to like about it. I mean, Africa's now 40%. They have been ruthless with costs. Witness the cost to income. HEPS 12% in a zero growth market. I mean, I thought not a bad set of numbers.
Ah, good morning, Simon. And good morning to all the listeners. Well, you call it not a bad set of numbers. I call it hotter than the Cape Town weather. Why do I call it that? Because, I mean, they guide it. I mean, in January, they already brought out a trading statement. So we already had a pretty good idea, you know, what the results were going to look like. They guided that the ROE, return on equity, it will be anything between 17 and 20, which I already thought was good. Because to put this in perspective, this is the highest return on equity that we've seen in Standard Bank since the 2007 financial year. So this is massive. And just to put that further in perspective, those periods where it was trading around about the 20% levels, the price to books on Standard Bank was way, way, way over 2x. So currently still trading 1.8x. Yes, I mean, you and I had this conversation, I think a little bit more than a year ago, on banks. And I sort of recall I told you, you know, paying one time NAV for Standard Bank current levels, it's a steal. Well, it's currently trading at 1.8x, so not the dripping roast it was trading, you know, call it year and a half ago. Back then, you know, we had dividend yields of way over 8%. Now, still, I would say the 5.6-5.7% still looking attractive. Yes, it was good. I think all in all, across the bank, it looked really, really solid. Like I mentioned, ROE came at 19.3%, highest level since 2007. All the earnings looked upwards. And yeah, in general, you know, your dividend yield up 12% in an environment where the GDP grown 1.1%. I think they need to applaud. did the basics right, and yeah, good set of results.
I agreed. I mean, just we've seen it from all the banks. And 2007, I'm reminded, that's the year I went to work at Standard Bank. Maybe it was me. Willie's losing their CEO after 6 years. I mean, when the news came, it was like, oh, it hasn't. I mean, 6 years, I suppose it's not a bad tenure. He's bumping up against retirement age. I have thoughts around corporates having these sort of strict retirement ages, but be that as it may. New CEO is a lifer at there. I mean, been at Willie's forever and a day.
Mm. At Willie's food. So it's, remember that. That's a very important part, because this is that's the department. Another conversation you and I often had. We said, just split up Willie's. Let's just have Willie's food and Willie's other. I mean, no, they've decided to. So let's focus on the CEO. I mean, my mom always, you know, when I grown up, you know, taught me the well learned lesson: always leave things better than you found them. And when he started in 2020, this was it was a tough Willie's. It's not an easy environment when he walked in. He sat with David Jones. He sat with other Australian businesses. And, you know, you've seen that since then they did sell off David Jones now, that loss-making business. It seems like Country Roads is starting to get a work now. Last set of results, I thought, was pretty solid. I felt, you know, optimistic on but like any dish, like any Chinese dish, you always get the sweet and sour. So let's look at the sour. When he stepped in, we had a share price trading at 52 rand a share. We had a market cap of around about 50 billion. Today, it's still around about the 50 rand levels, still current market cap about 50 billion. So I do think that he left Willie's better than when he walked in. And maybe this will just be the great, great platform for Sam to now take over and really take Willie's back to its previous glories.
Yeah, and that often happens, right? The one CEO does with the effort, and then the new incoming garners all the reward. So let's end where perhaps we should have started, which is wars in Iran, oil at 100, market turmoil. I'm suspecting that whilst this is making your days as hot as your Stellenbosch weather, I mean, the good old defense is the best thing to do is usually nothing.
Yeah, that is literally, when in doubt, just do nothing at all. I think it was the good old Warren Buffett that coined that phrase. No, it's a very, very difficult environment. I mean, I think the order of the day is going to be volatility for the next, I would say, next few months. It does seem like this is not going to be something that be solved just in a day or two. And I think for the listeners out there that's trying to make a quick buck, hey, the one thing that I've learned in any wars, you know, making a quick buck, just when you think you've found the bottom, it just shows you a new bottom.
Yeah, the quick can turn, and this is just a volatile market. We'll leave it there. That's Skull Glow, PSG Old Oak. Always appreciate the early morning. Our poll today is back on that Standard Bank. And as I said, we've had all four banks report now. They've all actually been quite decent. Your views on the numbers from the big banks. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Yisha Hatia. She is Senior Director of Research and Consulting at TransUnion Africa. Yisha, appreciate the time. Your TransUnion Q4 2025 Mobility Insights Report is out. Part of the big story, perhaps, is, I mean, it really was a very good year for new vehicle sales. I mean, best in a decade or more.
Correct. In 2025, we sold 422,103 units, which is almost 20% increase compared to 2024. In quarter four alone, there was a 15% year-on-year increase. So it has marked the strongest quarterly volume since the post-pandemic recovery began. And we're going back to at least 2014 before we saw these numbers.
Oh, wow. Okay. Proper numbers. Yeah. A lot's driving it. I mean, and I want to deal into sort of what people are buying and the like. But one of the issues, I suppose, is that perhaps we've kept our cars longer, and of course just lower interest rates must be helping.
Definitely. So they all play a role in what's affecting the customer's wallet and their pockets and affordability in general. We're also seeing that, you know, the imports of Chinese vehicles, they're coming in at much lower prices, and we're seeing that demand for those vehicles growing. They are almost one in every five vehicles are now a Chinese vehicle being sold in South Africa. So South Africans are definitely leveraging that affordability piece. They're also thinking about how they're structuring the deals and the type of vehicles that they're buying. Mm-hmm. We saw some interesting numbers around the used to new ratio coming down, which means customers are buying more new cars than used cars. It's quite interesting because if you're thinking about the psyche of the consumer, they're thinking, you know, I'd rather buy a new car, spend a little bit more, buy a new car, and I'd get a servants plan, I'd have a warranty, which takes away some of that risk we would have if we bought a used car. And when it comes to the actual pockets and they're thinking, you know, how do we fund these new cars? We're also seeing that from a financing perspective, that ratio is moving. So people are financing the new cars over the used cars. But quite interestingly, on the finance side as well, we see that they're extending their loans. So we're seeing about 56% of all loans are now more than 72 months in term.
Okay, so from a duration as
Correct. So from a consumer perspective, their monthly installment, you know, doesn't change, buying a used or a new, but they have that opportunity to extend the term. So they're playing around with a couple of, you know, factors. And again, that affordability of the vehicle price is definitely helping them as well.
That affordability is the big shift. My sister just bought her car. She got a brand new one out the box. She happened to have bought a Japanese, but it's the same. I mean, the price was, it was akin to what she could have got a brand new car at. Now, of course, you know, different models and everything, but they really are competing strongly on, I was going to say price, but it's more than price, it's value, because there's,
it's value,
it's bells and whistles, it's airbags and screens and CarPlay and everything.
Correct. And so it's not just about the affordability. Consumers are seeing value in these models. They're coming with more than the basics. And as I said earlier on, just having the service plan and the warranties that they offer that gives consumers the sort of peace of mind is definitely something that our consumers are treasuring right now.
Is this very generational? In other words, the younger folks sort of more going for the Chinese and maybe the older generation still looking at some of those sort of, I'm thinking the top end luxury, and luxury might be in inverted commas, but are we seeing a generational difference?
So within the generations, we do know that our data does tell us in terms of preferences, the Gen Xs and baby boomers, they do seem to be more loyal to brands, whereas the Gen Zs and millennials are after value. They're after value. They're after, you know, the best bang for their buck. If you're looking about intent within the market, their purchasing behavior, you know, across the different age groups, again, that's our Gen Zs and our millennials showing stronger intent to enter the market and purchase these vehicles, where our Gen Xs and baby boomers are slightly more conservative with, you know, taking on that additional assets or taking on that additional debt that comes with that asset. So we do definitely see that differentiation within the generations.
And this, I mean, my sense is, I mean, this really is a fundamental shift. I mean, this isn't something which is, you know, just suddenly, you know, it was like some cheap Chinese or Asian cars arrived on the scene. This really is our motor industry broadly as to what we're going to be seeing on our roads has and is changing, and never say never, but probably not going back to what it used to be in many ways.
Correct. So I don't think it will go back. I think it's still changing. I think there's still a lot more influence coming into the market. There'll be more brands entering the market. The competitive landscape is completely changing. But the buyer mindset is also changing. And so it's understanding that, you know, this it's almost equilibrium driven by affordability, which is also being shaped by the interest rates and the value brand disruption. But we also need to understand the long-term impact of that because, you know, as we spoke about, you know, the terms getting extended, the risk is almost moving forward. And so it's really important for lenders to be aware of those dynamics as well when it comes to extending those loan terms, and consumers also understanding what that actually means for the lifetime value of the vehicles.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. What about new energy vehicles, the hybrids or maybe fully electric? I see a few of them on the roads. I see a few of them charging at the shopping center, parking lots and the like. But to my sense, it's still quite a small part of the market.
It is quite small. I mean, it is growing. It's still quite pragmatic. So it's about 4% of our total sales came from new energy vehicles. We're seeing a stronger demand for the hybrids, the plug-ins. And I think that comes, you know, what we call range anxiety. I think people still have that in a bit. And as we're building up that infrastructure, hopefully that sort of anxiety will start to lessen. But ultimately, it's still quite small. I think people like the idea of it. You know, they're buying into the idea of being more efficient and being being more sort of green. But ultimately, you know, without the correct infrastructure, we're still going to have that range anxiety.
And that infrastructure is significant. I mean, it's more than just putting someone on the N1 and the N3 so that if I take a trip to Durban or Cape Town, I can charge en route. I live in an apartment complex and I simply can't charge. There's a lot to it rather than just a few charging stations at shopping malls and on freeways.
Correct. I mean, we are seeing certain dealers also support that. So, I mean, they're creating portable packs as an example, and they're also building in that infrastructure, you know, along the routes. We will get there, but I do believe it will take some time.
Yeah. And to be fair, when it first came out in the US and Europe, it was the same process, very slow at first. We'll leave it there. Yesha Hirta, Senior Director of Research Consulting TransUnion Africa. Always appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Thoughts from me on the war in Iran and whether this is another taco trade. Trump always chickens out. The short answer is no. The thing with the taco trade was that Trump was usually the only player. Yes, he would be, you know, threatening tariffs. So there would be Europe, for example, on the other side, or India, South Africa, whoever. But Trump was the player. He was the one threatening it, and he could then roll it back. We've seen it many times. Last April, Liberation Day tariffs, most notably, but research shows that he's actually gone through with less than a fifth of the tariffs that he has threatened. Mostly, he uses it as a cudgel. We've got the story of Greenland as well, where he was going to take over Greenland. And yes, Europe responded strongly, but again, there was only really one player there, and it was Trump. This is different. This is absolutely different because there are multiple players in this game. That is obviously the US, but there's Israel and there is Iran. And this means there are three real players. So Trump can chicken out. He can declare peace in his time. He can take the US troops home or whatever the case may be, stop bombing and the like. But does Israel follow suit? Does Iran accept a peace deal? News yesterday that Iran is saying, you know what, not really interested, and we think the Straits of Hormuz should remain closed. And that perhaps is the biggest threat. And here's a scenario which could play out, which is that Iran, and to be clear, their country is being bombed severely, and there are civilian deaths in the thousands. But this is a country that's endured hardship and restrictions and sanctions and bombings of degrees for decades. I mean, the Iran-Iraq war back in the 80s, this is not necessarily new, and particularly to the leadership. And perhaps that's the key point, where the leadership can say, you know what, we want our pound of flesh. We are going to keep that Straits of Hormuz shut, and we want, I don't know, an example, or U.S. bases in the Middle East to exit. Would Trump accede to that? No, surely not. And yet, the power in many senses sits with Iran because they can keep those straits largely closed. It's one thing to say, you know, just pay the higher insurance premium, or, you know, get the Navy to escort you. The point is that their narrowest range, they're about 30 kilometers. Someone can sit on the Iranian side and just fire a rocket. It's not an easy place to just protect, to just say, we will take more insurance. I don't think this is a situation where Trump simply can chicken out, even if he wanted to. That's it for today. Yesterday, we were chatting with Shundenderi, independent analyst. We were talking the OUTsurance results that included a special dividend. South Africa doing good. Australia, well, weather issues again, but that's kind of Australia. And of course, their island division, which is new and growing, but still loss-making, moving in the right direction. Stock is flat over 6 months. We asked if there was opportunity here. Almost half said, yeah, great value. Almost a third said no, it's looking expensive. The rest were saying it's just a bad sector you don't like. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7.
Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobukhle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again Monday. Two pot withdrawals.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.